and gentlemen, friends and rivals, happy holidays! My name is Jared, and with me is the thankful, joyful Ian.
That's me!
We will be your hosts for the episode. Here at the Game Table Podcast, we take a look at various board, card, and other tabletop games. We give an overview, provide our overly considered thoughts, all in an attempt to give you an idea of how well it would fit for you and your table. Today, though, we're taking a break from our normal one-game review, and we're going to talk about gaming during the holidays.
Merry Christmas! Merry Christmas! Merry Christmas! Is that our intro? Is that all we're introing? Are we doing anything more than that?
That's it. That's all, that's
all right,
you got.
All right, all right, all right. All right, all right, all right. Well, welcome to this episode. This merry, happy, joyful, maybe not so joyful for some, hopefully it is joyful Christmas and holidays,
you know,
for you.
You know what? That's right. If it is not joyful for you, then I hope it gets better. I really do. I genuinely hope it gets better for
you.
Yeah,
and maybe you can play some games and it bring a little joy to your holidays.
And you know, if you don't have anyone to play games with this holiday season, then pick up Marvel Champions and play solo.
Yeah. Yes, 100%. You should definitely pick up Marvel Champions if you haven't, because I love that game. But I do have a question, as always. As we move into the holidays, everybody has different gaming experiences, and everybody plays games, you know, with or without their family. I hope that most people can play with their family, but I will say for Jared, and then I'll respond after you, but as far as your gaming over the holidays, Thanksgiving will be right around the corner when we release this episode. And yeah, and then Christmas will be coming in the next month. But I will ask more in Christmas in mind, though. When do you get like your holiday gaming in? What time do you get it, like before the actual big day? Do you get it on the big day? Like what time, like when do you normally get some games in?
Yeah, so holidays are a really busy time for our family because we have all of our extended family in town. So typically for Thanksgiving, we'll go to Anna's side of the family and do Thanksgiving Day with them. And then the day after Thanksgiving, we'll go over to my mom's house and hang out with her and my brother and whoever else is in town. And then for Christmas, well, December really as a whole, we get a lot of gaming in during December, because both Anne and I have birthdays in December, and we typically have gaming during that time as well. As well as just, you know, holiday get-togethers and hangout time and all of that. So December, in particular, would be gaming around the holiday. But Christmas Day itself, we probably don't get very much in just because of all the other stuff going on with the kids. But jumping back to Thanksgiving Day, and then Thanksgiving at my mom's house, we definitely get gaming in on the holiday itself. So Thanksgiving Day typically looks like when we get there, we're hanging out, watching football and stuff. We'll do an early dinner, and then it's pretty much gaming and hanging out the rest of the night. And it gives lots of opportunity to game and that sort of thing. And then we have kind of a long-standing tradition that my dad started of playing cards at my mom's house that was something he really enjoyed doing. And so it's a different type of gaming when we go to my parents, but still get a lot of gaming in nonetheless. And so, yeah, I think that's a snapshot of kind of how my gaming looks during the holidays. What about you?
Yeah, so it depends on what side of the family, I guess it is. If it's my side, we'll probably play on the day and just go like over early or something, because it's pretty casual. Like, it's really just like a couple of us. So probably keep it like that and get some games in that way. And then if we go up to my wife's family, it's a little bit more chaotic. Yeah, there's a lot of kids and other family members. So we'll be up there for Christmas. And we've done that before. If I do get gaming in, it will be probably the day before or after. But I think for Christmas time, normally what we like to do is it's very busy in the morning, but in the afternoon, it's very chill. And so I'll probably get some games in, even some small stuff, and later on Christmas Day and maybe even into the evening. So kind of a little bit of both. not anything a little bit more before and after, I think, in general. But I think on Christmas, we usually try and get something in the evening just because everybody's kind of like settled down and, you know, the kids are having fun or whatever, or they've gone home or whatever. And so we kind of take that time to relax.
Do you have a game that consistently shows up each year, or is it pretty fresh each time?
It's usually stays fresh. I do see probably Wingspan showing more wings around this time.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So, yeah, I could see that because a lot of people like that one. So I could see Wingspan showing up a lot.
That's cool.
So, but besides that, no, I kind of just bring whatever. I usually bring like a whole case of games and see if they ever get played. If anything, I bring some solo games. But yeah, probably Wingspan or like Awkward Guess. I think that's one that they all like. So those are the ones that usually get played of some extent. So what about you? You got any?
I would say at my mom's house, it's pretty consistent. We will either be playing cards or we will play Crokinole or we will play Ticket to Ride.
Okay.
That's a game that all those games are things that Josh really likes.
Yeah.
My brother. But yeah, so those are typically the staples for my side of the family. With Anna, I mean, it's something new every year. I am like you. I will pack a big bag of games, and typically I'll pack it with half adult games and half kid games so that people that want to hang out with the kids, or if just the kids want to play by themselves, they have something they can do. Or we have games that either are ones that I've been really enjoying lately, or ones that I've been wanting to show the family because I've kind of learned what they like. But yeah, I mean, Anna's side of the family, it's always something new, typically.
Well, that's great. If you guys have any games that you frequently play, be free to share those things inside our Discord and socials, because I know a lot of people were looking for some answers. And so please share with the group of what you play. And then we do have some questions to get to for this episode, based on the holidays and what you guys have kind of come up with as a community. We asked some people and they gave us some questions that we'll be answering. But if you do have answers to those questions and the ones we just asked, please let us know what your answers are, because we're just two people and we don't know every game.
That is very true. But we definitely do understand that gaming during the holidays can be intimidating. And it can be difficult when you're bringing together these people that, you know, it's not like a normal gaming night where everyone definitely wants to play.
No.
You might have to deal with some people who are just, you know, doing the obligation of hanging out with the family.
Right.
And gaming is nowhere near on their radar.
Correct. Yep. You never know who, you know, Uncle Bob, if he was interested in playing or not. And if he does play, he probably didn't want to begin with. So we all have it, and it does happen, but you love him anyway.
Uncle Bob.
That's right. So,
oh man, I love it.
So what should we start with here?
Yeah, so Ian, we'll kick it off here. You know, we were talking about bringing games. How do you decide what games to bring to holiday family gatherings?
Oh, it's so hard to know.
Yep, it definitely can be.
So I usually have a little like gaming backpack. So I'll bring as many as I can fit. And then if there's like a couple more that I really wanted to bring, I'll just have them loose or just put them in a bag or something. But what I do, as far as picking games, I try to bring a mix. There are kids in my wife's family, but they're not really. I don't really have any like little kid games, and they're all like under like 7 and 6. So it's like tough if I don't really have any of those games, nor a lot of them. They really wouldn't be interested. So eventually, I'll be introducing them as the uncle, but not yet. So with that, it'll be mostly adult games. So what I try and do is bring a nice mix of different games that for either party games, maybe like a couple player, you know, 2 to 4 player games, and then maybe up to 6, and then maybe are a little deeper, but not aren't considered necessarily like a party game. So I like to bring a mix of different games. So that's how I start. If I brought 10 games, like I want two of them to be big party games. And then, you know, three or four of them to be kind of deeper strategy, maybe a max count of four. And then over that, like a nice, like light fam, definitely like four or five like family games too. And I'm considering the family games kind of lighter. They can have deep strategy, but like no more than like a 2 hour time block for sure. That'd be too much, especially around the holidays. There's a lot of good things going on. Unless they're willing to commit something more than that, I think 1 to 2 hours is a good, you know, or less if you can. And so I like to stay in those time blocks, and I try and divide it up. You know, I got a, you know, a card game or whatever. I just like to mix it up. I like to have a lot of different options based on, because I don't, you know, you never know what you're getting yourself into. And if, you know, if everybody's busy, okay, maybe it's just a couple of us. Let's play like card game or something like that. And so I always bring a good mix. I always start there, and then I always pick games that I like, obviously, or things that have hit before. But I always bring a mix. That way you're not be like, oh, dang, I left that game at home. Just bring stuff that they know, potentially, if they've already played something and that you know they like it, always bring that. And then you can start from there and be like, okay, well, let's play that and then play something new. But always just bring a different mix of different player counts and time blocks for sure. That's kind of where I always start.
Yeah, I think that's a good call. And I will just go ahead and preface on the front end for all of this. Most of what I have learned about what to bring for holiday gaming has definitely been through trial and error.
Yeah,
it's something where you have to learn what works for you and what works for your group. What I mean by what works for you, maybe not even necessarily the games that you enjoy the best, but the games that you can teach the best. Because
right.
If you can get something on the table and teach it quickly, then you're going to have a much better shot of getting people to be engaged. So I'm always looking at whenever I look at my wall of games, I'm always looking for what I can teach well and teach quickly, and we can just go ahead and get started. But I also do, like, I know my family pretty well on both sides, and I've had a lot of time to get to know them. And much like I do with any game night, whether it's just having another couple over or if it's something where I'm having a bigger game night with people, I'd really try and think about each person that's going to be there, what their likes and dislikes are, and kind of formulate a plan of gaming that evening based around that. You know, Ian, you said that you would pick something that would be no more than 2 hours. I think I would go even more conservative than that. I would pick something typically no more than an hour, maybe an hour and a half, depending on the situation. And if I do that, if it's an hour and a half game, it is just that one game.
Right.
Otherwise, I'm typically picking something that'll go faster. Because I just, like I said, I want it to go quickly because people's attention spans, just for most people that don't play games regularly, just it's hard for them to stay at the table and just do that. Especially with, I know at least for Anna's family, there's 25 or 30 so people that are there. So it's constant chaos in the house of all the different things that are going on.
Right, right.
So it's hard to be able to just sit there and focus for a long period of time.
Yep. No, that's fair. And so again, it's all specific to what your family is. So if you have like 20 people, then I mean, it's going to be tough to, you're going to probably pick maybe a couple more party games. And so my family's not necessarily like that. We don't have that many people. I think the max we have is maybe 10, but that's kind of a group between adults and kids, and they're not all really going to want to play. So it's just, yeah, it's just different. It depends on your family size, and that's definitely going to be a big part of it.
Yeah. Another thing to think about, just as you mentioned, player count and the amount of people that are going to be at your holiday gathering, is to consider if you're the only one that can teach. Anytime I have a game night, or if I am taking games over to somebody else's place or whatever, I'm always considering who's going to be there and who can actually teach games. And so if someone mentions to me, hey, there's this game I want to show you, I love that. And I say, absolutely, please bring it.
Yeah.
And then that way, if there's a group of like eight, then I can split into two games of four and make sure that the person teaching that new game is in a different group, so that both of us are able to teach and we're able to mix and match if we need to. But having that extra teacher really changes what you can bring to a game night or to a holiday night.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, for sure. I'm usually the only one teaching in my circumstance. So, but no, that'd be great if somebody else can. Like, if you could find somebody else, then that leaves you a lot of space to pick some games that, you know, maybe a niche people want to play that they don't, that they only want to play something deeper, or it just leaves you a lot more room to decide that you can split the groups. It's so much better when somebody else can teach something. All right. Well, with that, do you have anything against moving to these community questions here?
No, let's do it. You go ahead and do the first one.
All right. Well, this is from Josh. He asks, what's an easy game to pick up that's a strategy board game to play with your family, especially for people that, you know, that aren't into those? I would say, as far as an easy game, obviously, you can go down a long list. That's going to be, you know, more challenging to answer as far as like every single game, but games that I particularly like that are easy, and I've already mentioned it, Wingspan, always a solid family game, easy to teach, very quick as far as teaching, and then you can get into it, you know, within like maybe 15 minutes. And so it's very quick teaching time, but also you kind of learn as you play very quickly. And you don't have to explain like all the rules, like, you know, all the little stuff, but you just like explain the basic stuff. And that's what I'm always looking for as far as the forefront, is that it's easy to teach and easy to understand, but it has a little bit of depth behind it. Downforce, a great party game up to 6 players. I love that game. We've done a review on it, Wingspan also. And so those are the two that I always go for. But if you're looking for something a little bit more in depth, I've mentioned this one too, Awkward Guests. And so it's a Clue-like game. So everybody understands Clue. Everybody grew up on Clue, more than likely, or they've known of it. Maybe they've played it once or twice, but it has a lot more depth behind it than just a regular box game of Clue. And so you're trying to figure out who did it, why they did it, how they did it, with which weapon. And you're trying to figure all of those things out, and it's still a card-based game. You're kind of handing cards between players to kind of deduce the murderer. But it has a lot more intricate system, I think, and it's way more in-depth. There's a little bit more, there's more weapons, you know, the people, on top of the people, there's motives. And so it's just a more competitive and more strategic game of Clue. It works well with everybody. It's so good. And that one's another one that I really like. And we can keep going, but I'll let you respond.
Yeah, for sure. So some of the games that I have had a lot of luck with, the first one and the one that I think is my favorite to introduce people to the next level after they've kind of gotten some of the basic gateway games out of the way and they're wanting to take that next step. One of my favorites to do is Stockpile. So Stockpile is a very streamlined game about playing the stock market, and it does not have all the nitty gritty of what actually goes into playing the stock market, but everyone understands making money.
Yeah.
My favorite thing about this game is that you can walk someone through all 6 phases of a round. They're very quick phases. They're easy to understand phases, and you are not costing any of the players their ability to make choice or to build their strategy. You're just walking them through what each phase does. And then after the end of round 1, definitely by the end of round 2, they've got it. And you're able to just go at that point. Lots of fun, lots of good strategy to it. Could not recommend Stockpile enough.
There you go.
The next one that I would recommend is Between Two Cities. This one's by Stonemaier Games. High quality pieces, really quick, 20-minute game. The way it works, you are building 2 cities and you sit between them. And you're working with your partners that are on either side of you. They're not really your partners, though, because only one person's going to win at the end of the game. And it's really quick. It's easy to understand. There's a nice little cheat sheet to keep all the information right there in front of you. And you're just putting together a nice little city, or 2 of them, in fact. But I have had multiple groups where I've been able to teach this in less than 10 minutes. And then the game's over 20 minutes later, and everybody's usually wanting to play again.
That game's great. That game is phenomenal.
Yeah, no, I love it a lot. I've played this game a ton and never get tired of it. Always really enjoy it. And I, again, would highly recommend it. And again, it's one of those that sits in that camp of there's enough strategy to make it feel like a really good game, but it doesn't overwhelm anybody either. The last recommendation I'll just start with, and it's not one game, but most of the co-op games that sit in the pandemic level.
Yeah.
Co-op games are really easy to get people involved in just because everybody's working together and there's not this pressure of, crap, I don't know what to do. No one's feeling that. You're able to kind of walk with people through the first round or two, and then from there, they start taking ownership of their piece and their position and what they wanted, what want the group to do.
Yes, definitely co-op games. Definitely pandemic. Another one is the Forbidden series, Forbidden Island, Forbidden Desert. I think there's another one that just came out. I don't even know, but
Forbidden Sky, I believe, is the one that you're thinking of.
Any of those.
Yeah, for sure. So Jessica asks, hey, my question is related to having some family members that don't really like strategy games and usually refuse to join. Can you recommend some games that everyone could enjoy together, even people who don't typically enjoy games?
Oh, man. Oh, man. Great question. Okay. Well, if you're talking about people that don't like games, that's hard.
Yes.
So starting out on the wrong foot, but we can find some ways to get you involved. All right. Now, some games that I think work really well for people that don't like games at all. Codenames is always a solid party game because it's very easy. You're just, as far as socially, you're just trying to put some words together and communicate it to another team. Oh, very fascinating game. Works really, really well with people that have never played games before and aren't interested necessarily, but they'll always play a big party game kind of like that. I'm going to go more down the party route because you want to keep them involved, but you don't want something that they have to sit there and just be a heavy thinker. And so you want them to be involved. You want them to have fun. And so I'm picking games that are more kind of towards that party aspect. But some other good games that I really like is some dexterity games. Dexterity games work really well. Ice Cool is one that I really like.
Yeah, that's a good one.
And so that one works really well. Is you're just flicking some penguins around a board. And so it works well. So another one I would recommend is Pitch Car, which is a great little racing game. Up to 8 players. You build the board. It's like just a little track, and you flick wooden discs around in their cars. And so you're just kind of flicking those around like a big map, a big racetrack. And so you can like knock people around and stuff like that. But again, great, great dexterity game, works really well, and a solid game as far as dexterity. As another party game that I really like, and I don't know if you've played this one, Jared, have you played Spyfall at all?
I have. Spyfall is really good.
Yeah. So Spyfall is a solid, another party game, which is in like, these are all in like, they can be kind of set in that werewolf. If you ever play Werewolf or Mafia or something like that, or Resistance, those are all great. The One Night Werewolf series is always good. But the Spyfall is a little bit another social deduction kind of, but it plays in like literally like 4 minutes, super fast. And so that's why I really like it, because you like, okay, if somebody wants to leave, like let them, it's like, it's not, you don't have to commit to anything big. Like they can literally walk in and out. You can add people in and out within like after one round, and one round lasts maybe like 5 minutes tops. And so it's like you can have interchanging people, I think up to 8 or 10. And so it's got a great mix. You can mix people in and out constantly. And then you're not going to play that game all night, but you'll kind of interchange a lot of these games. But these are good games to really like throw in and out, because people can interchangeably, you know, come in and out of the game at any point, and it's not like a big deal. And so that's always what I'm looking for in those party games.
Yeah, I think those are good calls. I know for me, again, it goes back to thinking about who the person is and what is the reasoning behind why they don't like games. Is it because they're not competitive? Is it because they don't want to think, like Ian mentioned? Did they have a bad experience? I mean, it might be as simple as a parallel example. I know someone that really didn't enjoy steak, and I asked him why he didn't like steak, and he said it tastes like rubber. And I said, can you give me one chance to cook you a steak? And he loves steak now because he has had a actually good steak instead of it being well done.
There you go.
And so I think just that's part of it, is learning what happened or what's going on and why they don't like gaming. But once I've kind of figured that out, I can kind of pivot to either, if they're not competitive, I'll do something like Wits and Wagers. So Wits and Wagers is a trivia game, but it takes the heavy duty knowledge side out of it. It's more of you're trying to be, it's very Price is Right, where you're trying to get close, but not go over in your answers. Mm-hmm. And that facilitates someone into not feeling that anxiety of, oh my gosh, I have no idea what this is. Everyone's going to think I'm an idiot. And that's some of the things that are going on. And so by eliminating that, you're allowing them to feel more comfortable. So Wits and Wagers might be a way to go. If they're competitive, but they don't like to think, then I definitely go for the social deduction route, because they want to figure out what's going on. They just don't want to think about it, and they still want to win. So I might go with a Sheriff of Nottingham, like we've talked about before,
mm-hmm.
or I might break out Coup. Coup is another one.
Oh,
that,
yes,
it's very quick. Lots of good bluffing going on and lots of depth to it once you get into it. Another one that's super simple, but I have always had success with it, and I to this day cannot explain to you why it has so much success, but the mind will pull in anybody, because they'll look at it at first and be like, I don't get it, but I'm going to try it. And then they try it and they get hooked. And next thing you know, it's half an hour later and you've run through several different games of that game. So would highly recommend The Mind as well.
The Mind is great.
It's a very simple cooperative game where all you're trying to do is stack cards in the correct order, but you're not allowed to talk. And it is very fast. It's very fun and it hooks you. It really does.
No, The Mind is really great because if people aren't forced to talk, they literally don't, the game, you don't talk. You just play cards in sequence, but without communicating whatsoever. You have to do it via, you know, facial expression, potentially very touchy, but eyes, and then just waiting it out, just seeing what happens. And you can play it up to a good amount of players. I think the box says four, but like we've played it with 6 to 8. I think you can do it with whatever.
If you got two decks, I mean, you can play up to, we played a 30-person game at Gen Con. So, I mean, it can get crazy, but you can definitely do it.
Oh, wow.
A couple other ideas just from a party game or social deduction game perspective. You mentioned Werewolf and things like that. Normally, I really like the one-night Ultimate Werewolf games, but at a holiday setting, it might be harder to hear the app playing. But Werewolf or whatever is an excellent game to get everybody involved if you're wanting to do a group game where everybody plays together. And so that might be one to consider. Another one that I found that works really well is Concept. So in Concept, one person has a thing, a name, or something that they are trying to get everybody else to guess. And they have a variety of hints that they can give on this board, and everyone else is working together to try and figure it out. It works surprisingly well. People get really into it, and I've seen some people play that game for hours at a time. So it can really hook you, but it's really easy to entry as well. So if you don't, again, if you don't know what the deal is, maybe reach out ahead of time. Be like, hey, I'm thinking about bringing some games. I would love it if you could join in, if you'd be willing to do that, and kind of see if you can kind of feel it out a little bit.
Another one that came to mind real quick, Decrypto. And so that one's another great, it's kind of like a Codenames-esque, but it takes it kind of to a different level where it kind of like builds upon itself, as you have to like only give one clue and then a little bit more and a little bit more. But the cool thing about that, if the other team guesses your like word, then you lose. And so it's like you don't want the other team to get everything about it. And so it's very, very interesting, very strategic. I'm not good at it because my vocabulary and way it doesn't work, but I have fun playing it. The rest of my family does. And so that one's also a really good one.
Nice. Yeah. Word games are great. I mean, there's a reason that there's 1,000 apps on phones of word games, because people like words and like thinking that they're really smart, and words are an easy way to do that.
And so those are all games that we would say be better for people that like aren't interested in necessarily playing like deeper games and kind of a big group. It can kind of fit into a lot of those, all the games mentioned. So definitely take a look at those. Now with that,
sure.
Jennifer asks, so when we're talking about kids, because we have a lot of kids, you know, around the holidays,
Yes.
So what can kids play independently while mom and dad play a 2 hour long game? Jared, you answer this one.
This is both the hardest and the best question that we received, without question.
Yeah.
So I after I got this question, I think it's been on my mind pretty much right up until recording time, because I've been really wrestling with it and thinking, all right, how do I really make this work? So because at first I thought about games like Mousetrap or other dexterity games, but the more I thought about that, you run the risk of the contraption not working right, and then you're stuck, you know, fixing that for them all the time. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, you got to make sure that it's games that are nice and simple to understand, because if there's a whole bunch of rules involved, then it's going to be a lot harder to keep them engaged without running up and asking, how do you do this? How do you do that? So on and so forth. So what I did kind of come up with are several co-ops, or at least a couple of co-ops that I think are good fits. And we actually have reviewed these first two. So my kids love Kids Chronicles, The Quest for the Moonstones. They actually, like I said in that on that episode, they played the last mission all by themselves without me. Now, it does require a kid that can read. Otherwise, you can't do it by yourself. You have an app, so they're not watching TV and just having TV babysit them, but they still have a screen that helps guide them through the game. And once you've kind of taught them how to use the app, it's very easy for them to just go and do it themselves. And it's kind of cool because they're able to do a choose your own adventure kind of situation. Another one would be something, would be a co-op that has simple rules, but it keeps them engaged. So ZooBreak does a great job of this, where it's very simple how the turns work, and they can play it themselves, because once you've taught them how to play, then it's as simple as letting them go. And, you know, they don't have to play it perfectly, obviously, mm-hmm. but I think it's something that could definitely keep them engaged for at least 45 minutes to an hour. Then maybe you switch them over to a different game. If you do something that's competitive, I think it's got to be really simple. So I'm thinking about, and I'm coming at the perspective from a younger kid, but something like Dragomino. It's simple, very easy. Even though they're competing against one another, the rules are very straightforward, which means that they will be able to just play and not have a bunch of fights about what the rules are. They might still fight about something else, but they at least have a good idea of what the rules are supposed to be. Another one that I would definitely recommend is, and this is getting to a little bit older territory because they need to be able to do basic math, but Can't Stop is one that I think kids, or my kids, have played really well at least. And it's really simple, and it's adding numbers together and kind of a push your luck mechanic. Simple and easy to pick up on. Again, that's kind of the theme that I've been thinking through all day, is that it's got to be stuff that's really simple to explain. Because if it's complex in any way, then it's going to be a lot harder for their attention to stay. One other recommendation I'll make, and this is more of, it's not this game specifically, but this type of game. So Pokemon Master Trainer is an older game that came out when we were kids, but it's all about going on the Pokemon journey. It takes a very long time, and it's roll and move, so it will take you a long time to finish, which, if you're into that particular IP, is great, because they will sit there and play for a long time. So if you know that your kid is into a particular IP of some sort, I would look for games in that particular genre, because if they have that, then they will definitely be hooked. And it really doesn't matter if they know all the rules or not, because they're going to be so sucked in by the theme. Now, Ian, I know you don't have kids, but you do, you have taught kids, as you mentioned earlier yeah. in the episode. So what strategies do you implement to meet a goal like this, where you have a chance to play a game while they play a game?
So there's a couple that I've mentioned one, because kids are great. You know, they love dexterity games. So Pitch Car, I did mention earlier, that would work well. Another one that's a little bit for little, kind of maybe smaller kids, but the Rory's Story Cubes.
Oh, nice.
Those are nice because, you know, you just roll some dice and then they have like little pictures on them, and they have a lot of different, like, you know, genres, or like, I don't even know what they're branded in some way. They even have a Disney one, but the dice have like little pictures on it. And so you like roll the dice and then you make like a story with the dice and you tell a story. And so if the kids are, you know, really creative and they're interested in doing that, you could, you know, let them kind of just play with the dice and make some stories up, and works really well. It's always a fun time. So I've done that one. That one works well. Again, I don't really have any kids, so it's kind of hit or miss if I ever get to that point. But definitely some dexterity type of games work well. And if you can chuck some dice around.
That's true. One that I have not played, but is basically a game that is also considered a big toy, is, I forgot it.
Fireball Island.
Yes, Fireball Island. Yeah.
Yes.
I think that one.
That is a big toy. You could do that too, yeah.
Yeah, so there's game elements. Again, I don't know how much of it could stop working during the game. I've not actually played it, but I have heard that it is a game that is essentially a giant toy.
All right, so I guess we've talked about a lot of kids' games, and so is there anything as far as, because we have a question from Rick with the Christmas coming up.
Yes, I will quickly go through what has worked for me from that perspective, and I think we can kind of leave it at that for now, because unless you have something that you want to throw in there as well that hasn't been mentioned already.
No, I think, yeah, no, you continue on. I think we've touched on it a little bit. I've thrown my recommendations out there.
Okay, cool. So Rick asks, with Christmas coming up, what board games would you suggest for kids at different ages? All right, so I'm going to just start at the bottom and work my way up, and I will get as high as I know, and then we'll just kind of make a few suggestions from there. So we got our kids started into gaming when they were 2 years old. One of the ways to really help do that is going to a game company called HABA, H-A-B-A. It's a German toy and game company. They sell lots of different board games, and they have something all the way down to two. So we got them started with a game called Hungry as a Bear. We also had them try My First Orchard, and another one at two was Here Fishy Fishy. All three of those were from HABA. Here Fishy Fishy is a little dexterity game where you're fishing for different fish based on the color that you roll. Hungry as a Bear is all about feeding this bear, and it's all about color recognition and things like that. And so is My First Orchard. A lot of the really young kids games are going to be dexterity based games that focus on learning your colors. As you get a little bit older, we add a little bit more. So there's Bouncing Bunnies at three that we really liked, and the Ladybugs Costume Party. They were by different companies. I think that might have been, Pegasus Games, I believe. And so those add a little bit more. There's a little bit of memory involved in Ladybug's Costume Party. Bouncing Bunnies is still a color one, but there's a little bit more going on than there is at the two-year-old level. Three-year-old is also where I started introducing some of your standards. So Candyland, Chutes and Ladders, things like that. We tried Trouble, but they weren't ready for that yet. And it's got to be something that doesn't take too long. So even Candyland, we played like half the board. We didn't go much higher than that. When we got to 4 years old, it took me a couple tries to get there, but Dragomino, I cannot recommend enough. Dragomino is by Blue Orange Games. They have a lot of kids games. They make a lot of games for adults as well. But Dragomino was something that absolutely meshed really well with my daughter Joy. And it's a simple domino game with dragons, and they loved it. Joy loved it. Faith loved it. Hope, even at three, is already involved and loves it as well. So that's at four. At five, when Faith was able to start reading, I introduced a little bit heavier. We taught her, well, I walked her through Toy Story, Adventures and Obstacles. That's a co-op game where you're playing as the various toys, and they have multiple missions inside of the box where you're going on. It's a lot of fun. You definitely have to walk them through it a little bit, but now that Faith can really read, she can handle her turn all by herself. And I will say, just with that and with all these games, it's one of those things where you really just, you want to help them in the early stages to get the foundation, because once they get a little bit older and they're learning how to read, then they're going to be able to just run with it. They, like I said, you know, they, when we got to the older ages, Kids Chronicles, things like that, Zubrick, even My Little Scythe that Faith is playing now at age 7, she's able to make all the decisions herself and she's able to think through that really well. So that's kind of the 5, 6, 7 range, I would say. With where Faith is at now, I am starting to just introduce her to my games at a very slow pace. So we showed her Tsuro, which is a simple game about moving along the board and trying to stay on the board. And she has learned Lorcana a little bit. Blue Lagoon is another one that she started to learn as well, which I jokingly say is Moana the prequel, the game. Anything like that, like, she has now got the foundation where she can move into that. So once they can read and they're starting to think for themselves, 7, 8, I think that they can start segueing into quote unquote, I don't know, the older board games, I guess is how you would say it.
Yeah.
So yeah, so that's kind of my recommendation. I mean, I'm sure there's others, but those are some of the highlights that I've remembered over the years as we've gone through this. And yeah, I mean, if you have other ones that you're looking at and you wonder if I've played it, please feel free to reach out. I am all for kids getting exposed to games. I like that teaches them how to think for themselves and that they are getting to get exposed to something that I really love. So that's kind of my basic recommendation.
Yeah, no, those are all, no, all of those are great. I haven't played any of them.
Perfect.
But no, those, yeah, there's definitely a ton of options, and don't be afraid to get, you know, your original, yeah, Candyland and like stuff like that. That those are games and they work well with kids, and don't be, just because it's like a big name like that, don't be afraid to buy it or play it. You know, that doesn't, you know, help anybody. So
yeah, absolutely. We've been teaching the kids Uno and cards like that too. So yeah, I mean, they're starting fresh. And so even though we really are gravitate towards heavier and more board games, you know, that there's a place for those other ones, and they really do build that foundation. So, and one more question from listeners, we're going to go back to Jennifer, and then I have a question. Yeah. I have a question for you. But before we do that, Jennifer, her second question was, what are some good game suggestions that don't involve a table?
Yeah, we've mentioned some. Your social deduction games are generally not going to have much of a board, and you don't need a table. And if it does have a tiny little board of some kind, like, you don't, it doesn't need to be anywhere specific. So Werewolf, I mentioned Spyfall before. On top of that, yeah, any type of werewolf game is always solid. You can't go wrong there. And so games like that don't require any type of board. And so that's what you're looking for. Any type of social deduction game is what I would recommend that doesn't have a board of any kind. And I've mentioned a lot of them already, but that's kind of what I like too, as far as games that you know, you don't need a table or board, or, and you can kind of sit around kind of a bigger room, you know, if it's just couches or something, you can kind of do it that way where it's more like just kind of casual. So do you have any other games besides those?
The one that immediately came to mind for me was Cash and Guns.
Yeah.
In fact, I think it's more fun if there's not a table.
For sure.
Because you can kind of jokingly act out the fight that's broken out in the warehouse as you try to decide how many people are actually going to split this loot that you just stole. But no, games like that, definitely, you know, it's so much. Sheriff of Nottingham, another one. Those bluffing games are so easy not to require a table.
Yeah. Yeah, no, for sure. I know you said you had... That was the last question. I actually have a surprise question for you.
Oh, boy.
I know, right? And so I'm curious of how this turns out here. So hold on. It was a late question that got added to the pool. How do you patch things up with your family when you inevitably have a fight because you got too competitive in the game?
Well, okay. So I know this is not foolproof, but one of the things I try to do on the front end is make sure it's understood that, especially in something like bluffing games where you're outright lying to people, you just create the expectation on the front end that, hey guys, we're going to be lying to each other and we're going to be trying to screw each other over so that we can win. So what happens during this game is not something that's personal, and it's not something where someone's like intentionally trying to hurt you or offend you. And so just setting that expectation up front really helps. Obviously, it doesn't always work. Yeah, it's tough. I feel like in those situations, I have to let it go for a little while and kind of give that person some distance, because typically if they're getting really upset in the game and it's at you directly, then they're pretty heated, right? Because it's just a game and it's easy to forget that. But at the same time, if they are that heated, they probably don't want to talk to you about it afterwards.
Right.
So giving them that space, and then just after a little while, maybe pulling them inside and being like, hey, I just want to make sure we're cool, kind of thing. Because, I mean, you're family. Like, this isn't something where you're never going to see this person again. You do want to make sure that you are keeping those relationships intact. But again, I think setting the expectation on the front end is very important.
Yeah, I think that's the best way to do it, is just set the expectation ahead of time. And if something does come up, just either slow the game down and make it light again and just take, you know, don't make it be the example when it comes to being overly and competitive, which I can be. And so I always, when we're talking about a big family stuff, I have to just make sure that I'm not losing my cool because if anything, it's our job to keep it contained.
Yeah.
So, you know, try and make it, you know, easy and light as far as the mood, and not try and do anything too crazy. I think that's going to be your best approach. And yeah, being upfront about like, hey, this is how we're going to play this game. And so always a good thing. There's not really a good way to go about it after you've upset somebody. Like you said, cool it off, let it just take its time and come back and be like, I apologize if that took a bad turn and that wasn't the intention. And so, yeah, always. Yeah, it's a tough thing.
For sure. All right. My last question. What is your favorite Christmas gift, gaming wise, that you have either given to somebody or that you have received?
When it comes to Christmas stuff, I always put stuff on the list as far as games to buy or that I want, you know, and stuff like that. I don't know if I have like a singular one. I will say though, every year I usually ask for some type of Marvel Champions, and it's a good stocking stuffer for me because it's like $12. And so, you know, you can get a couple of them and like, that's my day, you know? So that all works well. And I've enjoyed that. And so I get one like every year. It's crazy. And so I really enjoy it. Those ones always, it's like I know the shape and everything, but I still know what it looks like, and I still am happy about it because I'll always throw like four or five different packs on there, if you know the most recent ones, and then see what I get and see what happens. So, and I'm always excited. So those are always good. And then there's always the big box if I hadn't gotten one yet. And so I'm always excited about any game, honestly. Every game that I open, I end up, and speaking of things that we play over Christmas, I usually try and get a play-in over Christmas if I open it up during that time. And so that's always the fun part for me. If I get something new, you know, whoever gave it to me will, you know, probably want to try it out or something like that. And so that's always the exciting part for me, is just honestly opening something new. And even if it's something that I, you know, had played before or not. So that's always fun. What about you?
Yeah. I mean, as far as what I've received, I think my favorite one has to be the Power Rangers game. That was something my mom got me. I told her that, you know, this was something that I could really enjoy, and I wasn't sure if she was going to get it or not, but I was the one that kind of put her onto it. But then she definitely was the one who got it for me for Christmas, and that was a really great gift that I received. One thing that I love giving people is dice, whether it's a D&D set or just fun big dice or whatever. It's something that if I think they'll use it, you know, it's something that I know that we can talk about. And it's always fun to like get them a color scheme that I think that they'll like or something fun like that. So just finding little things like that are always fun to try and get people. And I've always really enjoyed doing that.
Yeah, no, that's a great option. as far as stuff that I buy for other people, I don't always buy people games that I know, like, don't play games. That's something I haven't really done, unless it's something light or, you know, we've played it before and they really enjoyed it. So I kind of stay away from that. But no, that's a great idea. Some dice or something like that. Or, you know, I've bought people some cards and, like, stuff like that, you know, kind of like general gaming stuff.
Yeah.
So that always works. But yeah, no, those are good options for sure.
No, cards are a good idea, especially if you get like a fun skin to go on them or a high quality set or something like that. Yeah. I mean, everybody knows how to play cards. Like, I mean, as I used with my family example earlier, you know, so no, I think it's a good option for sure.
Yeah, well, I think that's all we have for this episode. I don't know, Jared, do you have anything?
No, I think that's about it, man. No, this has been fun. And I really do, we both do hope that y'all have a great holiday for Thanksgiving tomorrow. And for, you know, as the holiday season comes, whether it's Christmas or Hanukkah or just getting together, because that's what our culture tells you to do. I really hope that you enjoy your holiday season, that you're able to get lots of gaming in, and that this has been a little bit helpful. So we really appreciate that. We appreciate you taking some time during that holiday season to check out our podcast. So thank you.
Yeah.
If you have feedback or want to give us your thoughts on the game, any game that we've mentioned, we would love to hear from you. The links to our socials are in the description. 5-star reviews, following us on Instagram, and making sure you subscribe in your podcast player of choice. All of these heroic actions are immensely helpful in growing this podcast. As always, we give special thanks to Angie Santiago for our cover art and to Anna Snyder who made the music. Join us next week as we get back to our normal schedule. Anna and Jared do Soar the Skies in SkyTeam. We actually will talk about it this time. We have lots to discuss and look forward to seeing how that one lands. In the meantime, may your dice rolls and your card draws be blessed, and your experiences at the table be ones to remember forever.
Have a happy, happy holidays.
Perfect.